Pitter patter.
Let's get at her.
Well, hey there, Christy. How are you now?
Good, and you?
Not so bad. Welcome back to A Thinking Person's Guide to Letterkenny. Mm-hmm. This is our episode 11. We're now here to discuss season 3, episode 7, the concluding episode of the third season. More accurately, the interim episode between the third and the fourth season.
Right.
Canadian series, but they've enrolled it, Hulu did, that is, in the third season. Mm-hmm. As we discussed last time, each of these interim episodes is centered on a holiday, and they stand alone, or relatively alone, compared to the preceding and the subsequent narratives.
Any cliffhangers that happen in episode 6 will not be resolved referenced until season 4.
Yeah.
So I like the standalone holiday episodes. They're fun little, like, just, I feel like it's just an opportunity for creative exploration for the cast and writers, and that's fun.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's a good opportunity to explore some of the characters to greater depth and not do so with the burden, I guess, of any dominant narrative structure, obligations thereof. So, so this one is Halloween.
Yes, it is.
Right? The Haunting of Modine's 2.
Ooh.
Right? and it's an artful take on the whole Halloween genre, but a rewarding one. So, shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
All right. So, this episode begins with the classic intro. Mm-hmm. Wayne saying words to the effect, well, Halloween isn't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And them, all the hicks, that is, Wayne, Derry, Squirrely Dan, and Katie at the produce stand. There's an aside reference to the fact that they're clearly filming this in the dead of summer.
Right, yeah.
But they're hoping to pass it off
as fall
in Ontario. And then there's a further allusion to the idea that Squirrely Dan says that Al Gore may be onto something.
Right. Yeah, and I like that to the produce stand generally doesn't, we've noted that it doesn't usually change much, but it is decorated for Halloween for this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the normal season. They don't take much effort in transforming it, but clearly this has become seasonal for this one-off episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Katie makes reference to the previous night had been Devil's Night, upcoming was Halloween. And then this precipitates a discussion in which Squirrely Dan references his nephew Samuel.
Oh, fucking Samuel.
Who is, Wayne says, oh, you mean speaking of shitheads? But according to Squirrely Dan, Samuel wants to make an apology for his actions the previous Halloween.
Yeah.
Apparently he had stolen a candy bar from his sister.
Yeah.
And Wayne had caught him at it or seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's none too happy about it.
No, you can't steal candy from your sibling, especially your younger sibling.
Your younger
sibling. Not Cole Samuel.
Right. Yeah, and Wayne being the arbiter of justice in this universe to some degree, and also no fan of children,
especially Samuel.
Right,
especially Samuel.
Oh, that little fucker.
Fucker.
As Katie says, and then Wayne repeats.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they resolve to let that lie, that Wayne was not going to give the little guy any of his full-size candy bars.
No.
But then this precipitates a further discussion between Wayne and Derry, because Derry is claims that Wayne's been big leaguing the whole town.
Right.
By giving out full size, not fun or snack sized candies at the Halloweens. And Big Shoots wants to interject right on cue, and Mom had to take care of that. Well done.
Okay.
Quickly resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne returns the critique that he is, he's not big-legging, but in fact, Derry is backdooring.
Yeah.
Which I did not understand what that actually meant in the context.
I guess you can kind of, you know, put the clues together and assume it means like trying to sneak something in. Without, well, that sounds even worse. Maybe it's coming, if I'm coming in through the back door. See, I can't talk about it without thinking sexually now. Well, that's the problem. It's all
innuendo.
Yeah.
And they play it as such rather dryly, but yeah. There's clearly the idea that Derry's been backdooring.
He's been underhanding them, right? He's not giving them what they're due. Right.
Which hand is the underhand?
As a left-handed person, I'm going to say probably the left hand.
Yeah, that's the way we
It's the way the world views me.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the definition of sinister?
Yeah.
They say.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is basically the intro.
There's
a lot of cliffhangers, but some of them get introduced later on.
Yeah.
So scene one, we cut to outside Modine's too. The crew is rolling up because as exposition declares, they Gaylor had invited them over before it even opened up. They ask her if she's hungover when they get there. Because she's holding a glass of water. And she says, no.
Hear me now.
This is holy water. She's using a
Haitian accent, right? Which is funny.
Yeah.
She's got her glass of holy water.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
apparently, as she claims, Modine's too is haunted. Right?
Yeah.
And who specifically does she think is haunted by?
Uncle Eddie.
So, Wayne and Carrie's... Wayne and Katie's... Uncle Eddie, who
just recently died.
But yeah, we'd already been party to that whole discussion. But Gail claims to have taken Uncle Eddie down.
Yeah.
By which she means taking him down, and she said she only got to do it once because he died shortly thereafter. To which Katie replies, "He died in his 80s. 90s.
He died in his 90s.
And everyone is quite taken aback.
Right.
Except clearly Gail, who's... you never heard of someone with a Jerry Care fetish? Get the fuck out of here. To which Derry replies and explains, yeah, you never heard of lemonparty.org?
Yeah, I forgot to look that up. I need to look that up.
All right, look that up real quick. Yeah, right. So from there, then, it becomes clear that Derry and Squirrely Dan are on... side of assuming that it is haunted.
You should not look up lemonparty.org.
I think I said that to you.
I know. You did. Yeah. And I just want everyone to know you should not look that up. It's three very old white men in a... what's a 69 if there's three people?
You're not the only one who's not particularly strong at math here.
Right. That's what I just saw there. So do not click on lemonparty.org.
Or do if that's
oh yeah, you're into that.
Unless you're prepared.
That Jerry Care.
Just be prepared.
Yeah.
As long as you're prepared and that's your thing, by all means.
More so we should explain though why exactly she feels that it's Uncle Eddie that is haunting Modine's too. It's that there's this glass container of his pig hoof hops ale.
Right.
That I guess she had somewhere else. And when she walked into the bar that morning, it was sitting in the middle of one of the shelves. And that's what she said. He tried to get me to drink this shite.
It magically reappeared.
Right, exactly. It had been pushed to the front or something. And she said, this is the shite that he tried to get me to drink after I took him down. Yeah. So it's all surrounding this pig hoofs.
That's the smoking, allegedly smoking gun.
Allegedly.
In this whole discussion of Modine's too being haunted.
Yeah.
So what follows then is the Hicks investigation of this possibility.
Yeah.
As I began to explain, Squirrely Dan and Derry are clearly on the side of assuming that it is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Katie and Wayne are very skeptical. In fact, outright stating that it can't possibly be.
Mm-mm. Could literally explain it a million other ways.
And it just gets more ways, larger
as you numbers. Go forward.
Yeah. So that scene one, ends with the first, not the last by any means, appearance of Bonnie McMurray.
Mm-hmm.
Initially in a Britney-esque outfit.
Yes.
Or like only described
hit me one more time, baby.
Yeah.
I sang that wrong, girl, but you know.
Outfit.
Yeah.
The Dwayne, Darian, Squirrely Dan, no, excuse me, Squirrely Dan, Darian, Katie.
Right.
All, once again, taken aback.
Right.
By her.
Bonnie McMurray.
And Wayne nonplussed.
Right, never even looks at her.
Never even looks at her, but then leans over to evaluate her and then questions her. Oh, so you're going off to the bloody bloody fundraiser with your cupcakes? I forget.
It was Catholic schoolgirls raising money for a mission trip somewhere.
To Nicaragua's.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
you reminded me. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And she says, "Yeah, that's right, Wayne." He says, "Well, good for you. Enjoy yourselves."
Enjoy yourselves.
Yep. And off she goes. Mm-hmm. So there in end scene one, as most of the subsequent episodes end in a similar fashion, as we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In most of the subsequent scenes begin, as scene two does, with Derry sampling a beer from on tap at Wayne's.
Oh, yeah. He's all about sampling her her seasonal beers.
Yeah, as he alluded to at the beginning of season right. one. We didn't mention that.
Yeah.
The first one is the Woolrich Taffy Cone Harvest IPA from Wellesley, Ontario. And he goes on to describe it in terms that a sommelier would be quite proud of. or your average beer geek in America.
Yeah, or your little crafter.
Be, right?
Yeah.
Concluding with, it sounds like a tragedy occurred while making breakfast. And Wayne responds with, get this man a poppers.
Right.
Uh-huh. So this scene then, after that introduction, is the hockey boys.
Yeah.
Ostensibly on trial before the four Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
To their involvement in this alleged haunting. They're not sure why they should be included. They haven't done anything like this in a while, but
to which grade 9, grade 8, grade 7, grade 6, we haven't done any of these things.
Right, to which Wayne responds, you're shitheads. so that's why they're included. This unique brand of tomfuckery is in play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, in fact, then precipitates, Squirrely Dan saying, and do you have an alibi? And they say, we do not have apple blies.
We're really glad you asked about our apple blies. Yeah, we're really glad. And, you know, now let's pull up our PowerPoint.
They pull up
so
a PowerPoint.
So they've created their PowerPoint.
And describing how couldn't possibly have been them because...
They were with their swipey snipies.
They had evidently picked up some young ladies on the social media dating platforms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And not only have they done that, the haunting had to occur between 3 and 9 a.m.
Right.
And each of them have been with their swipey snipies between 3 and 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Which left them unaccounted, apparently, between 6 and 9 a.m. However,
they had switched ladies.
Done the switcheroo.
Done a little dosey-dose. Yeah, actually. The ladies did a switcheroo, which yeah. I like that they placed that decision in the hands of the ladies
right.
and said that each of them had done a takedown. The ladies had done a takedown of Riley and Jonesy.
Yeah, otherwise it would have been
pretty
schmarmy, yeah.
Yeah, otherwise it would have been schmarmy. Right. So
that scene two ends yeah. then with them being vindicated.
Right, they are excused.
And Bonnie McMurray appearing out of the kitchen once again.
Bonnie McMurray.
As a ranger of sorts.
Yes, yeah.
Eliciting the same response as you already mm-hmm. alluded to.
Yeah.
From the boys and Katie.
Mm-hmm.
But Wayne resolves it once again by highlighting that she must be off to do the... what was the one in this case? Fundraiser for the...
Something cancer patients.
War
veterans. Cancer
yeah.
patients.
Mm-hmm. Through her, you know, Girl Scout troop or what have
right.
you.
Right, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, enjoy yourselves.
Right. Totally mm-hmm. explainable.
Yeah.
She just happens to be in an overly sexed outfit.
Right.
Yeah. That obviously...
Second one of the episode.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm. So scene three, you're drinking the Oka Old Style Harvest Pilsner from Kahnawake, Quebec. And I didn't catch the rest of that. I kind of checked out in that rest of that description. I'll follow up with the subsequent description because it's even better. But this one then, it's the natives who are on trial,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so to speak, by the Hicks. And it's Tanis and her boys. And you think this is an Indian haunting, where you're on a, are you on your burial ground? Were there moccasins at the foot of your bed? Is there a tomahawk in your door? No.
So all these clearly couldn't have been stereotypical, right. You know, oh, it's a native haunting. Yes. I like that Tannis calls out their bullshit for assuming it's her.
Yeah, they're gross stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, then she says, well, you get yourself a couple dream catchers and stop watching shitty horror movies. Almost immediately, then, Bonnie Murray emerges once again, this time dressed a la Pocahontas, yes. I would argue, in a, again, hypersexualized Native American dress.
Yeah, really bad.
Bonnie McMurray, all of them excited, except the natives, obviously.
Right, Tannis is very upset. Do I even have to point this out, is what she says.
Right.
And then Wayne explains, or asks Bonnie, are you on your way to...
Yeah, upcountry to the protests where... dressed in an obvious evidence of cultural appropriation to explain the circumstances of cultural appropriation to those people who don't understand cultural appropriation.
Yes.
Yeah. And that he does. Yep.
And that he does. Uh-huh. So the end of, before we move on to the next scene, Gail has decided at this point, Uncle Eddie just wants me to take him down again. Mm. And Wayne again says, well, let me make a call, right? Because at the end of each of these scenes, he says, let me make a call. And he brings in the next...
Somebody else.
Yeah, the next group to interrogate.
And defendants, so to speak. Yep. Yeah. This is scene 4. This is Derry referring to the Helmick Premium Blonde Harvest Ale from Mitchell, Ontario. Mm-hmm. It's a hard-working cooperative, tough in the corners. What's this word? I can't even read my own writing now. It says, Zurich bean off the top with a Strayhorn turkey finish, the dark meat.
Right.
It tastes like wheat from the field of a stay-at-home defenseman, a la Travis Hamonic. Anybody? And that's reference to a Canadian hockey player.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I didn't know any of that watching through it. But then when we looked it up.
Not a prominent one either. Yeah. And not one anywhere, Leonard Kenny. I looked it up just to confirm that. He's, in fact, from Manitoba. And he's of Métis background, which is interesting to notice.
Okay.
Is that hockey player. But that's neither necessarily here nor there.
Okay.
At this point.
I don't know what that means.
The Métis people, so those are people that have descended from the mixed union of French-Canadian trappers and traders with the Native American group.
Oh, yes. Oh, we watched, we learned about the Métis people. Yes, we did. Yes.
That's part of our discussion of one of our points of contact with Canadian culture, the frontier, and our discussion of that.
Well, and we watched a video about the Métis people and how they're often an overlooked group within Canada.
Still,
because they are of mixed heritage, and so there was this initial shame within the people, the group itself, that they didn't want to... you know, speak of their actual history, but if we just acknowledge everyone's actual and authentic story, then we're all better off for it. We learned about them.
Yeah, that young girl, Métis, talking about her heritage.
That's exactly it. Yeah, and she's, you know, let's tell the story. That was the point of the video. Yeah. I liked it a lot. That was my first... my first exposure to the Métis people. I didn't know anything.
Well, yeah, because part of their, you know, the fascinating element of them is, like, unlike a lot of other mixed union communities or even just Native American groups, they've remained relatively distinct in terms of their culture. They kind of developed of their own right in some degree of a vacuum relative to Native and European, you know, North American culture.
Yeah,
So they kind of had a period where they were out there on the prairies and the eastern parts of Canada and kind of had some independence. And so I think that reinforced their, their cultural distinctions that have carried on to this very day.
To assimilate in any way.
They had degrees of independence, of self-sufficiency that bolstered their cultural barriers and boundaries that I think still yet it plays out to some degree in the lives of contemporary Métis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so It's a curious group, and they've always fascinated me. There was, you know, a number of groups of them when they were forced to assimilate, you know, as so many of these groups were ultimately forced to bend to the nation state, whether it was the U.S. or Canada.
Yeah, right.
You
know, there same was, story.
Yeah, one fascinating group there was the Rockies Boys group that was had been from the plains of Manitoba. That's been their heartland, as so many of them ended up out in that part of the world. But then they crossed the international border, tried to find some sort of political refuge in the United States.
Okay.
And ultimately did. And there's the Rocky Boys Indian Nation is in Montana. It's one of the reservations up there. And they're at least part Métis. From that history.
Okay.
Yeah, curious little.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
No, it's not well. I don't think a lot of people do. It's
not
discussed very regularly.
Yeah.
So this is scene four then, and this is where the Skids and Glenn are called in to be interrogated by the Hicks. It is probably the most enigmatic of all the scenes for the way it's played. The Skids it's Rold and Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Stewart.
Oh, this is my favorite one.
Oh, because, you enjoyed this most? Huh?
Yeah, okay. I did because it's.
Oh, that's because your boy,
it's Rold at his
Glenn.
Most Roldy. And Glenn.
Right.
And so it's just, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's my favorite one. Yeah.
Yeah, so Stuart's there acting as the seancer.
Mm-hmm. He's going to do the exorcism.
Well, so, actually, Glenn's doing the exorcism.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stuart is running the seance.
Yeah.
The seancer, as you said.
The seancer, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Rold is to be the vessel into which the spirit of Uncle Eddie is to be manifest and then ultimately cast out by Glenn.
Yes.
This apparently works to a T as Rold takes on some sort of persona, some demon-esque version.
Yeah, they don't explain if
it never gets explained. Glenn is out of his depth, has no idea what he's up to.
Right, he didn't expect this to actually happen.
He had no idea. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that just means that the three of them disappear and run out of the out of Modine's too.
I mean, there's
with no further explanation.
Yeah, there are a few good moments in this scene where Glenn says, he's referencing Rosie, says that she's Wayne's girlfriend. She's a sexy little Halle Berry. She's a something little Beyonce. And then he says, oh, it's a Beyonce seance. I love that. I love Rold is so upset in this scene. He's really scared that the spirit is going to come into him. He does not want this to happen. And he keeps going, Stuart, Stuart. Stuart! He's very upset. Does not want this to happen. Yeah. So I love all of the just high profile Roldiness.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's full Rold. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's him and his codependent subordinate best to Stuart's dominant. So they disappear.
Yeah, they just walk out. Right? Yeah.
And Bonnie McMurray emerges from the kitchen, this time dressed as a sexy baseball player?
Yeah, sexy softball player.
Says specifically going to the baseball tournament, does Wayne when he gets his chance to highlight it. Even though, you're right to notice that Squirrely Dan says, you make a softball hard.
You make a softball hard.
Which doesn't make any sense, actually.
I like the play on words.
It's a play on words. It seems a bit sophomoric. But that's Squirrely Dan.
Babe, have you seen this show?
Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Why hold it to any other standard? Right. Each of the others, meaning Derry and Katie, get their little asides in as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dingers all day as Katie's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But Wayne explains that she's off to the baseball fundraising tournament for...
I didn't catch his name. Some guy. Who was a great
guy. Great guy.
And he's dead, and they're raising money for his cause.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what emerges is Bonnie McMurray is filled with philanthropic spirit and busy as all get out.
She is very busy and is never fully clothed.
You could say it that way, and that's not inaccurate. It's just to say that she has a diverse and scanty wardrobe.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, very strong philanthropic spirit.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Yeah, she's all about giving.
Yeah, really, lots of volunteering. Right?
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Cut to scene 5. Did not catch the beer allusion in this one. Kind of exhausted by that whole thing. This is the one, I think, where Derry only gives a glass to Squirrely Dan. Where previously
it was the one before.
Where Squirrely Dan drank all the beer from him. Yep.
Yeah, because every time, because Derry would taste the beer and then say, anyone, right? To, you know, who else would like to taste it? But Squirrely Dan would down it. And so the prior one, Derry figured it out. And gave him just a taste, poured it into a separate glass. So, yeah, I don't remember what our beer reference was in this scene. Maybe there wasn't one.
Yeah. Because they're in the dark. They're in the dark from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
And this is the McMurrays. They're there to provide their ghost hunting skills, apparently, that they developed in their multiple excursions to Mexico, whether it was Pulco, a.k.a. Acapulco.
Right.
Or Coon, a.k.a. Cancun,
right?
Or the third one, I don't think.
Neither of us caught.
Yeah, which is probably Tulum.
Something around there, yeah.
Yeah, so they're there in that capacity. It's pitch dark, but we have night vision goggles on the camera.
So you can actually see
everything, which is a nice little touch.
Yeah, it's funny.
The McMurrays are there doing their usual shtick, I guess.
Yeah. But
Mrs. McMurray asking for a cocksucking G&T.
Right. What kind of gin you got on tap there, Gail?
Tap.
I think she did say tap.
No.
Maybe not. Yeah. But she asked her what kind of gin she had.
Yeah. And you noticed that she was tweaking Mr. McMurray's nipples constantly.
I did not see that.
Next time you'll notice it.
That's great.
You won't be able to not see it from now on out. But she's playing with his nipples the whole time. Funny. Presumably because she knows it's in the dark and nobody else can see it.
Right, yeah, so she thinks.
It's a nice little nuance. Mm-hmm. But turns out they didn't actually bring their ghost hunting equipment. They actually brought just the two-way radio that was the nanny camming McMurray's employees in the... in the break room at the farm.
Yeah, they were supposed to have their ghost walkie-talkie, but he brought the baby monitor from the shed.
Right.
Or the farmhouse.
Yeah, and so they're actually listening on the conversation of some of the farmhands who were talking shit on him and stuff, so...
So they just leave because he's like, well, I gotta go. Yeah. He's gonna go beat them up, so, yeah.
Actually, he says he's gonna go kill one.
He does.
Yeah, so... Yeah. Yeah. Quite aggressive. Yeah, and that doesn't have a Bonnie McMurray ending either.
No, we're done with it.
Because it's in the dark, yep.
Yeah.
So scene 6, then the final scene, is Gail deciding that the resolution of this whole issue is to have someone drink the full vat, big 2-gallon jug of this
pig hoof hops ale.
Which is literally has a pig's hoof stuffed
into it. Let's not ever walk past that.
Because Squirrely Dan's not there, she decides, for no other reason, I guess, it's apparent that Derry's the one to
do it. Derry's been tasting all of the seasonal beers, right? And so it makes sense to be like, and now you have to drink this one, Derry.
Possible continuity there, yeah.
Yeah.
He is not on board.
No, he does not want to drink that.
Not on board.
But,
ultimately, Katie and Wayne sort of guilt him into it.
Right, when a friend asks for help.
Right, they're standard reference when some issues like this come up
except Gail's not really asking for help. She's just saying you have to do this. I mean, I'm sure the platitude still stands, right?
But it's transparently a way to bully people into they're seeming to make no bones about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then Derry acquiesces, nevertheless.
He's ready to go.
He's gonna take one for the team, so to speak.
Pig hoof hops ale.
Except the twist is...
Bum, bum, bum. Wayne.
Wayne did it.
Wayne is the haunter of Moody's.
He knew that everybody loved a thrill and a good haunting, so he had been the one who had enacted it.
Mm-hmm.
And went along with it all the way throughout.
Yeah, he said he was looking for it's a good opportunity to fuck with everyone in town and bring some fun. Yep. So, Yeah. I like it, right?
But at the end of the day, you couldn't let it happen, right?
A little tomfuckery.
Yep. Yeah, and so then the last portion of this scene is...
there's a noise.
Yeah.
And you look to the side, and really expecting to see Bonnie McMurray in another costume.
Right, as it's so often done.
Right, but instead, it's a small version of Wayne.
Well,
and it looks like. It's a small child.
Shrouded in darkness, only visible in silhouette, so you don't even really get a great glimpse of it. But it's this little person in the shadows, and quite freaky, actually, as quite often little people are.
Yeah.
And, it then turns out that that's where Squirrely Dan has gone. He's brought his nephew Samuel.
Right, fucking Samuel.
Right, to apologize to Wayne for what he did. Wayne accepts the apology and makes sure that Samuel's also apologized to his little sister and that he has the opportunity to be the arbiter of justice by highlighting that you don't turn your back on family and you don't act like that to your siblings.
It's very
and
sweet.
All stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it turns out that then not only has he come to apologize, but he's actually dressed as his hero, which
is Wayne.
Turns out to be Wayne. And so he's dressed in the same checker plaid shirt and jeans that Wayne is almost always wearing.
Yeah, it's very cute.
So even though Wayne has declared that he's not going to give Samuel a chocolate bar this year to complete the whole cycle of
punishment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, well, I never told you we couldn't share a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Hoisting little Samuel up on his lap.
Yeah.
To which Samuel replies,
coconut's fucking gross, asshole.
And that's it. And so, at this point, all of Wayne's worst suspicions about Samuel, children in general, are pretty much confirmed.
Yeah,
right?
they are little monsters. And Wayne has just gotten even more proof.
Vindication of his initial stance. Mm-hmm. And he had done everything right by way of, acquiescing and being conciliatory with little Samuel, but to all for naught. Because
Samuel's still just a little asshole.
Just a little shit.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's the episode 7 of season 3, The Haunting of Modine's 2.
Yeah.
What's your takeaway, if anything, that we haven't already addressed? Big anything you learned or?
Yeah, I mean obviously we talked it through as we went. I sort of said this at the beginning. I just like the opportunity to explore the characters a little bit more, right? Creative, some creative space. And, when you step away from the plot a bit, you get to explore a little bit more some other things. And, and it's just a fun little offshoot, holiday themed. But which also gives us exposure to all of our main players again, which is nice. Just a little check in with each of our groups. Remind you of how awesome they each are.
Yeah. Pretty much everyone, except for the hockey team and the coach, and Dickens. There's really nobody else that's left out of this episode.
Yeah, everybody gets players.
Some airtime at least.
Yeah.
So it's unique in that regard that it does casts a wide net in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and although those are great points you make, that it does allow the further depth of exploration. I really enjoyed the subtle takedown of the beer culture.
Right.
To over nuance all that discussion and this development of this, very effete parlance associated with, the tasting of this, that, or the other.
Right. These craft beers.
Right.
It's become its own very specific subculture.
Not to degrade it. It's fine for people to do it, but they do they do a nice able-bodied vision of its worst extent.
Yes, perhaps. Exactly. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
So all right, well, that's all we're going to do this for this episode. And we'll be back soon with episode 12, which will start anew with season 4, which just accelerates a lot of the plot lines. We're excited to get back into it. So until then, we'll talk to you later.
All right. See you in a few days, y'all.
Bye now.